This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. This coming Sunday is Easter, a high holy day in Christianity. In downtown Cincinnati, though, there will be lots of non-believers. The American Atheists National Convention is in town for the weekend. What does it mean to be an atheist, and what will this conference feature? Plus, are we at a point yet where candidates can seek the presidency in the U.S. without professing a religious belief? Let's discuss. Joining Cincinnati Edition via Skype, our American Atheist President, Nick Fish. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also on the line is Gail Jordan. She ran for the state Senate in Tennessee in 2018, and her atheism was made a topic in that race. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And in the studio is University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Welcome, David.
Pleasure to be with you, Michael.
If you'd like to weigh in on this topic, give us some comments or some questions, call us 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll find your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. Nick, I want to start with you. The Atheist Convention here in Cincinnati this coming weekend coincides with Easter, a high holy day for Christians. Is that typical for when you schedule this event?
Yeah, it's actually the time that we schedule it every year. The simple fact is that our community doesn't have a whole lot going on that weekend, so it's generally a good time for us to get together. And then the second more practical side of it is that the conference and convention hotel rates are much cheaper for us because nobody else seems to schedule things that weekend. So it's just all around a great time for us to get together. And, you know, it prompts a conversation and it challenges assumptions that people have about what happens during these high holy weekends and what people tend to do during them. And so that's a conversation we love to have. So that's why we tend to do that then.
So tell us about some of those assumptions that you believe people have about what people do on these types of weekends.
Yeah, you know, I think that most people think that everybody does what they do, that everybody gets together for an Easter meal, and that, you know, there are what we like to call, Christmas and Easter Christians who only go to church on these times, but they still call themselves Christians. We want to challenge that assumption that not everybody does that, that there are a lot of us out there, and in fact, in the United States, coming up on a quarter of Americans who are non-religious that don't take part in these sorts of things, but still like to get together and want to have a community and want to belong somewhere. And that's what we create a space for at our conferences, is for people from all over the country to find community in that way.
What do people who attend this atheist convention see? What's the program?
We want to challenge the assumption that some people have that we sit around agreeing with each other that there is no God. We have people from all walks of life. The point of this conference, the primary message is about everyday activism, the sort of things that people can do to improve their communities and make the lives of our fellows better through small acts of activism. I want to, you know, certainly commend one of the other guests on this show today, Gail Jordan, for doing one of the most powerful things that people can do, which is run for office and run for office as an outspoken atheist. People who challenge public policy, who are weighing in on issues that matter to their communities, people who are organizing, people who are doing public service and things like that. That's who we're highlighting. The keynote speaker at our conference this year is Jim Obergefell, who himself, you know, didn't think that he would change the course of American history, but simply by standing up for equality and demanding equal treatment from the government, he did. And he made it an option, and he made it available for those of us who want to get married to do so. And so we owe him a great debt of gratitude, just like we owe all of the everyday activists who will be on stage a debt of gratitude.
Of course, Jim Obergefell is the namesake of one of the Supreme Court decisions that led to the legalization of same-sex marriage across the country. Gail, I want to bring you in. You ran in Tennessee for the state Senate. Your atheism was noted in media coverage of the race. How did it play out for you?
Thanks. That's a great question. I had made the determination before I ever accepted the idea of running for office. I've been an out and open atheist for years in my community, so there was no desire on my part, but there was certainly no ability for me to hide from it. But I wasn't going to make it a main feature of my campaign. It does inform my beliefs, and it informs my activism. And as Nick mentioned, it's what drives me to make my community more just and more fair and more inclusive for everyone. I had not planned on making it the centerpiece of the campaign. The Tennessee Republican Party chose to do that for me. So it was it ended up being quite a roller coaster ride, but it is. There was a lot of positive net gain from it, because one of the things that we atheists, particularly in rural and religious communities, struggle with all the time is being misunderstood. It's much easier to build what we call a straw man, and for those who criticize us, they say, oh, they have no morality and they just do whatever they want to do. And we would always like the opportunity to say, no, our lives are informed by a morality that centers around human suffering and human thriving. And because the Tennessee Republicans chose to make it such a big deal in the campaign, I had the opportunity over and over and over again to be able to explain that to folks who were genuinely interested in how you live a moral life being an atheist.
So you ran as a Democrat, and you're in Tennessee, which, you know, is part of the Bible Belt, I presume. So did you get any pushback at all from fellow Democrats who may have been concerned about your position on this?
Another insightful question. Most of the Democrats who supported me appreciated knowing what my story was, but it didn't seem to affect their vote. They liked to hear the story. I was a formerly religious person, and that meant something to them. But indicated by our voter turnout, it didn't seem to affect them. Keep in mind that most of these Democrats in this rural area in Tennessee are Christian believers. Statistically, we know that they are, and it didn't seem to affect them. Tennessee has been run by a Republican supermajority for 10 years, and we have serious issues facing us, health care and education and rural broadband, all of these things, so that the Democrats, they appreciated knowing my story, but they were so ready to move in a more forward direction that seemed to be completely minimal for them.
David, one area that we still see overt displays of religious faith outside of churches and such is politics. So what are we seeing now in the political landscape as it relates to professions of faith and atheism?
I think the biggest thing we're seeing now is a range of responses, whereas if we went back a few decades, the response would be almost uniform. Now we're starting to see candidates who minimize religion and nods to religion, and some candidates who unprecedentedly, don't make any mention of religion in major campaign speeches. I mean, the God bless you, God bless America is almost pre-written into speeches for candidates, and it's starting to be a race now by some major candidates.
So an article in The Atlantic just last week used the headline, "Secular Democrats, the New Normal." It highlighted the presidential announcements of Democrats, noting that Senators Bernie Sanders, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Elizabeth Warren, as well as ex-Congressman Beto O'Rourke, did not invoke God in their campaign announcements. It noted that Senator Amy Klobuchar did. David, how does this play out as the Democratic primary unfolds and the field starts to dwindle a bit?
Well, one of the religious challenges for Democrats is dealing with the inherent diversity of the party. You're talking about a party that ranges in religious belief from folks who are active non-believers to folks who are at the opposite end of the spectrum. And a Democratic candidate has to speak to that entire spectrum. In that sense, it's in some ways easier to be a Republican. The range of beliefs is a little bit more narrow. It's easier to hit that middle spot. For a Democrat, the middle spot is almost, it's almost impossible to reach because you have active Democrats with opposite beliefs. But one of the things that we're seeing now, what really defines modern campaigns is the old rules are no longer in effect. So we wouldn't have been having this conversation a couple campaigns ago. And that's perhaps the most important point here.
Nick, I'd like you to weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, the thing that I think is really important is to note the inclusion and the diversity and the appeal to the diversity of the party. I was actually watching the announcement from Mayor Buttigieg on Sunday, and he actually had an invocation at his campaign announcement. But this religious pastor got up there and was doing the invocation and spoke explicitly to people without religion and said, you know, this is an invocation not just for those of us that are religious, but those without religion. And, you know, that's the type of thing that we want to see from candidates. It's not a complete elimination of religion from the public sphere, because it's impossible for many people to, or for anybody, to separate those beliefs from their policy. But what we want people to do is acknowledge the diversity of this nation and aspire to represent everybody. And that's what I think Democrats and indeed Republicans need to do a better job of. And we're starting to see that now. And that's a really heartening thing to see in 2019.
Gail, Tennessee is not a stronghold for Democrats. What are Democrats in your neck of the woods talking about in terms of what they hope to see in the religious professions of the Democratic presidential candidates?
Sure. And as Dr. Niven noted, it has become such a ubiquitous piece of what Democrats are trying to do. And as Nick mentioned, the diversity is so broad. I think because of the national politics and because in areas like Tennessee, where we have such an overwhelming supermajority by the other party, I think in a way it has become minimized. We need so much help and we need so much work and progress done on the political issues, on making, on our budget and how we're going to fund education and those things. The religious beliefs of the candidates have become less and less important, and I've seen that both from the candidates and from the voting constituency. It just doesn't seem to be a major topic of discussion because we're facing so many other important issues.
Nick, you mentioned earlier that Jim Obergefell, the man who was part of the U.S. Supreme Court decision that made same-sex marriage legal in the United States, is your keynote speaker. Do you think that the increase in national support for LGBTQ rights is part of the driving force in the increase in secularism in America?
Yeah, when you ask people why they leave religion, especially younger people, the primary reason that they give is the hypocrisy. They see or they hear this message that LGBTQ people are immoral, or that atheists and non-believers or people of other faiths are immoral. I mean, that doesn't comport with their experience in their day-to-day lives. And so they believe their own eyes rather than what they've been told in church. And it leads them to leave that behind. Now, these people aren't necessarily atheists, but they're certainly leaving behind the dogma of religion. And those interpersonal experiences and those connections that we can make as atheists and that the LGBTQ community can make, that's what drives people, to a more inclusive place. And that's a really important component of the work that we do.
The number to join the conversation is 513-419-7100. We'll continue our discussion about the American Atheist Convention in downtown Cincinnati just ahead. First, we've got to say goodbye to Nick. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Truly a pleasure to be here.
We'll have the organization's vice president on the other side of this short break. Gail and David are sticking around. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The American Atheist Convention is in downtown Cincinnati this week. Joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about it via Skype is American Atheist Vice President Debbie Goddard. Welcome, Debbie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Still with us on the line is Gail Jordan. She ran for the state Senate in Tennessee in 2018, and her atheism was made a topic in that race. Also still with us in the studio is University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science David Niven. Join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your tweets and your comments. I referenced earlier an article that appeared in The Atlantic recently, and And here's another excerpt from this piece. It says, while there are legitimate reasons to talk about religion less, such as America becoming a less religious country, and to describe it more negatively, such as religious bigotry being on the rise, doing so could hurt Democrats, such as Beto O'Rourke, in his effort to defeat Trump. According to the 2016 Pew Research Center poll, a small plurality of Democrats think politicians talk about religion too much. Republicans overwhelmingly think politicians talk about it too little. But Debbie, on the Democratic side, the stats are different for African Americans. While only 41% of Democrats said it was very or somewhat important that a president shared their religious views, among Black Protestants, the figure was 72%. That's even higher than among Republicans. So why are the numbers so different for white and Black Democrats, Debbie?
Well, it's certainly true that African Americans have always, when surveyed, shown that they're the most religious of the demographics out there. And we know that African Americans are a strong voting bloc that goes strongly towards Democrats. But there are a lot of reasons why we're such a religious group. Historical reasons, current cultural reasons. I think, unfortunately, it's a challenge for the Democratic Party to face the kinds of things that African Americans are interested in dealing with. I'm sorry. But that includes the things that the government hasn't provided to Black people across history. For example, I lost a connection for a second there.
Oh, that's okay. We can come back to you on that if you want to gather yourself, and we'll come back. And David, the Black voter made up a significant portion of what Democrats needed to even be competitive in 2016 and in 2018, some of the special elections that have come along. How are some of these candidates going to reconcile this need to appear to be religious in front of the Black voter base?
This is a very hard line to walk, and you're right. The importance of the African-American vote to the Democratic Party can't be overstated. Here's all you need to know about that. On white votes alone, the last time the Democrats would have elected a president was Lyndon Johnson. So without the African-American voter, there is no Democratic Party. How do you speak to them and this very significant portion of the Democratic Party that doesn't profess religious beliefs? I mean, what you have to do, of course, is speak of religion as a means of uniting people. You have to nod to something larger than sort of specific lines of scripture or you know, the kinds of things that candidates might have fallen back on in the past. And you mentioned Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, as somebody who spoke of religion but spoke of it in a way to bring people in rather than an us versus them kind of sense of religion. Just expressing the us part. And I think that's probably where Democratic candidates have to go. They have to, if they speak of religion, it's a religion that of uniting beliefs and of uniting purpose.
The number is 513-419-7100. Let's go to the phones now. We have Andrew on the line. Hey, Andrew. Is Andrew there?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Andrew, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to say, like an independent, I'm 30, so you know, I can identify with viewpoints on each side of the political aisle, but I definitely lean more towards the left. I think it's important nowadays to definitely try to keep religion out of politics as much as possible. Not to say that you can't respect somebody who's religious. I think it's fine if you're a religious person, but you have to be able to identify with people who aren't as well. It's really not fair to speak as a politician to all Americans and say, hey, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe this, this, and this. But I'll work for everybody so long as, you know, we support Christian ideals. You know, you can say you're a Christian, but I think you have to be able to keep that out of the political arena as much as possible. You know, so people who are Christian or Islamic or whatever, you know, even a Buddhist, you know, like whatever it is you want to follow, that's fine. But so long as you keep it out of the politics as much as possible, that's what I think you need to go for today, because you're never going to be able to walk a line as much as what people want to try to. There's always going to be that there, you know, but you have to be able to speak to it without letting it rule you.
Andrew, we appreciate the call so much. Thanks for your feedback. Again, 513-419-7100 if you would also like to join the conversation. Gail, you mentioned something in the previous segment about morality, about how some people may perceive atheists as being immoral and that there's a sort of copyright on morality belonging to evangelical Christians who support the Republican Party. How did you explain morality to voters who might bring this issue up?
Sure. And as Andrew was speaking, and he was talking about keeping it out of the public arena, I think it's equally as important for those of us who don't hold religious beliefs. I think it's important for us to communicate, as I did in my campaign, that it is our non-belief that motivates us and that inspires us and gives us our moral compass. In other words, the language that I used as I campaigned was to say, I don't have a rules-based morality or a book-based morality. My morality is based on the well-being and suffering of my fellow human being, of the members of my community, of the constituents in my district. When they thrive, I thrive, and when they suffer, my empathy and my compassion leads me to want to do something. And so as I would campaign, and I got asked that constant religious question, how can you be moral? It was an easy enough answer for me to say, how can I not? These are my fellow neighbors, and if I'm not struggling right now, good for me, but there will come a time in the future when I'm struggling, and I would love to have the support of my neighbors. Consequently, when they're struggling, I'm motivated to move and to make my community more just and fair. And I think, as Andrew was talking about how important it is for everyone to appreciate everyone's point of view, I think it's critical for us as non-believers to express that, to say it's not just irrelevant that we don't believe. It's an active part of why we do all of the activism that we do. Why we try to fight back against bigoted laws and bigoted legislation is because we want our communities to thrive, and that is driven by our belief that this is paramount, is the well-being of the people in our community.
We've made a lot about the makeup of the current Congress that took office in 2019, that it's more diverse than before. There are more women, there are more people of color, and there are different religions, including Muslims, in the Congress. But there's only one senator, Kristen Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona, who identifies as religiously unaffiliated, not as atheist. There are no members of Congress who identify as atheists. And Debbie, I want to ask you, why are there no members of Congress who are atheists?
Because it's still scary and it's still highly discriminated against. Whenever they do surveys of political opinions and they ask people, would you vote for A, and fill in the blank, whether it be a Catholic or a Jew or a Muslim or an atheist, it's often the case that atheists and Muslims tie for the category that people are least willing to vote for. That's because of misunderstandings. That's because people don't know what atheists are. They think that we're Satan worshipers, for example. They think, oh, we eat babies, we have no morals. I mean, it's a sad thing to say that that we're tied with Muslims. We and other minority religions have these issues in the country. Mormons have increased since recent politicians have been Mormons, but atheists are still there at the bottom of the ladder.
And David, surely with a country as large as the USA, there are pockets where an atheist could be elected to Congress. So why hasn't it happened?
Well, we have to make a distinction. You know, you're mentioning that there are no open atheists or non-believers in the Congress. That doesn't mean there aren't atheists in the Congress or non-believers. And, you know, I think the career of Barney Frank is a particularly illustrative one. You know, when he ran for office initially, he wasn't openly gay. Over time, he saw that he could be and he could stay in office. And so he was more free to be who he was. But even Barney Frank in that situation did not openly profess to not have religious beliefs until he was out of office. And so part of what we have is a tradition of conformity here. It's easier to just go along with what everybody else thinks than to say, I'm out here, I'm a little bit different. I question the ways that have organized, you know, this country and the world for centuries, and I'm not on board with that. I think what you're going to see is as this campaign evolves and religion becomes less of a requirement, you know, for candidates, you'll see candidates at you know, Gail and at the state level and at the federal level, more candidates like this coming out, openly running, and progressively, presumably, it becoming less of an issue in campaigns, it not defining every issue, as she was saying, you know, it came up quite a lot in her campaign.
And even Barney Frank, when he was in office back in the 1980s, there was a lot made about his quest to become the first Jewish Speaker of the House. So, I mean, the religious aspect of him was very important at one time, and then he would later not only come out as gay, of course, but also as someone who doesn't believe in God. We just have a few seconds left. Debbie, how many people should we expect this weekend at your convention?
Oh, the number's going up all the time, but we're looking at over 800, 850 people coming into Cincinnati for this.
I want to thank American Atheist Vice President Debbie Goddard, former Tennessee State Senate candidate Gail Jordan, and UC political science professor David Niven for joining us today. Thanks to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.